This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Kate Prusser. I am the managing editor of Lookout Landing. And therefore, I'm the host of the podcast today. Join me.
Unchallenged. Implicitly or explicitly. Unchallenged host.
Just to set the scene, today we're doing, I guess it's not really a live podcast, but for the first time, we're all three of us face-to-face, in person. Me.
It's a real face-off. We got a sort of triangle.
I have guns pointed at each of them.
It's a real Mexican standoff here.
Anyone who has a bad take gets clapped by me.
All right, so as you can tell, we are also, I'm joined by my podcast co-host, John Troopin. John, hello.
Hello,
welcome. They can't see you dancing, John.
That's okay. We're in my home, and you are my guests. I will hope that you both remember that.
All right, I put my gun away.
Thank you.
I am drinking your Rainier, so I need to mind my manners. And also, Matthew Roberson. Matthew, how are you?
I'm out here. I'm having a good time. I had the chicken sandwich today at the stadium. Can confirm that it slaps.
It does indeed slap.
Feeling good. But also, big development, which was uncovered by the local media.
Ooh.
Guns at each of you. The same place that has the chicken sandwich has gin and grape Kool-Aid in a vat.
That's
true. That was not at the... They did not see fit to put that one at the menu preview.
Interesting.
So.
Okay, that's for the common folk. No.
They also have gravy and rice, which is, like, ostensibly...
It is technically food.
It's just not one. Not a thing I would typically go for in any context, and especially not if I was to carry something to a seat
right.
and then sit down to enjoy my gravy and rice.
No.
I'm sure it's excellent.
I mean, I like gravy, for sure, don't get me wrong.
So we were at the exhibition game at the stadium today, which was nice. It was a sunny day, and you know, getting to sit up close. The results of the game, not so good. Between today and yesterday's drizzly, rainy, cold affair, which I have to be honest, walking to the stadium with like 5,000 people on a Monday just really, really was giving me some strong like fall of 2018 vibe. I was like, oh, it's cold outside, there's no one here, and the Mariners are not winning. So it felt the games don't mean anything. Like it was a little too real for me. I did not like it. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, spring training needs to stay in spring training. That's my hot take.
Yeah, I like the exhibition games that are like in a fun location. Like the Blue Jays do those ones in Montreal. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. But I agree, doing one in the actual home stadium is very weird. It feels very like stunted. Like we're almost there, but we're not. It doesn't count, but we're in the place where it usually counts. There's a lot of weird things to my head.
Yeah.
Where would you go see an exhibition game, like a spring training game that wasn't a spring training? Like, where would you want to see the Mariners play one that you would, like,
I mean,
try and go to attend?
Personally, that I would want to go to, and I think would be cool from a marketing standpoint, would be Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I would go to that. That'd be pretty fun. That's an easy drive. Mm-hmm. Get the international flavor that's, like, also just, like, 2 hours away.
There's a AAA stadium. No, the high... the short season stadium there.
Short season, the Vancouver Canadiens, which would be a little bit of a challenge because I think that there's not a huge seating capacity there, and they pretty regularly sell it out even as a short season team just because the people there want their baseball and they don't necessarily want to have to cross the border to get it. So, but I agree with you. I think that there are countless stadia that we could probably configure somehow into a baseball stadium to have that happen, right? It could be an exhibition game between the Mariners and the Blue Jays, too. Like, fly the Blue Jays over. I think that would be huge. I might not want to go to it. Yeah. I'm beginning to talk myself out of this.
If we're playing the Blue Jays in Canada, I'm not going. But that also is the one that makes the most sense. So I've backed myself into a corner here. There's also a certain city south of us that's trying to get MLB baseball. But I don't know if I want to go there either or support that idea or even say their name out loud. So.
That's right. No free plugs.
Yeah, no matter what Russell Wilson is telling you. Don't listen to his propaganda.
I wonder, so they did like a home run derby on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was the California League All-Star Game in 2017?
Yeah. And like basketball teams have done like games on aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
So like you'd need like a preposterously large ship, but like, you could get, like, a really big aircraft carrier and then, like, I don't know, put some turf, lay some turf down, and you wouldn't need, like, you could just have no, like, you could just hit off the wall, or, you know, the water could be beyond the walls, whatever walls you set up. I think that would be great. I think that would be really neat.
I mean, it sounds logistically like a nightmare. But also, it sounds like I would be able to covertly push Nick Rumbelow off there.
I feel like, given the circumstances of this, if it's on like U.S. government property, there's no way you do that covertly. They're gonna have security everywhere. He's also like on the team, so you'd have to like rush the field, basically.
Unless they have an actual, like, they bring back the like USS Mariner like bullpen cart, but like it's an actual boat, like the bullpen's somewhere else on like a different boat.
Look,
to bring them
a,
in
where there's a will, there's a way.
I will say, I saw Nick Rumbelow today from about 10 feet away. Dude is weird. I'll put it on wax. That guy gives me weird vibes. He was doing this like stretching routine like a good 4 innings before he would feasibly come in, which is fine, like, you know, do your routine, get into it, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of them where I was like, I don't understand how this is getting you ready. One of them was literally laying on the ground.
There was some active sunbathing.
He's probably like centering himself or whatever.
Yeah,
but it looked like he was just chilling.
Struck out the side today.
That is true.
We should talk about
this. How dare
he? Is it striking out the side if people get on base?
I think yes.
Yes. I mean, you did strike out the side. You didn't strike out the side 1, 2, 3, but you did strike out the side.
I recognize that it's a debate, and I think it's a reasonable one. I would consider it striking the side if you record all 3 outs in the inning.
Via strikeout. Yes. It's a challenge. It's a difficult thing to do.
Now, pitching-wise, he actually looked pretty good today.
Yeah.
But Kate still wants to throw him into the ocean.
Yeah.
I direct your attention back to the Japan series, where he served up a juicy 3-run home run. So
yeah, that was a weird call to even have him in the game at that point. I guess we can talk about the Japan series.
Yeah,
now.
We can do that. Yes.
So we want to do just like a little bit of season projection stuff tonight. We want to do sort of some stuff that we're hoping for, maybe some stuff that would worry us, but. Matthew, I know you recapped game one.
Sure did.
Mm-hmm. And I recapped game two. Kate, you watched both parts of
I fell asleep during game two.
Yeah. Did you enjoy having the games?
Yeah. Would you want them to ever do this again?
Probably they will at some point, right? They've done it once before.
They're definitely the top of the list for when MLB is trying to send teams to Japan.
Yeah, well, I mean, for us and I recognize that it's like an easier flight for us than it is for other teams, and so I get why you would send West Coast State, and also the crossover between Japanese fans and everything. I'm a little annoyed that the Angels got asked and were like, thanks but no thanks. And
right. I didn't know you could say no.
Instead.
I didn't realize
that was hilarious that like Otani was staying up and literally said, I wish I could have gotten to do this.
Yeah. Dude, my dude. You very well could have. Mm-hmm. Had you made a couple different choices. Mm-hmm. I guess that I understand with them not having Otani active and able to play, like it's definitely a bigger deal to have the Mariners and have Kikuchi and Ichiro, obviously. And I mean, you know, that was baseball history right there that we witnessed and special and important. But, like, you could have still brought the Angels over and, like, had Ohtani there, and it would have been a huge deal for those fans. So it's a little annoying. And if I were the A's, honestly, I would be pissed. Because, yeah, like, they're out here...
They got short shrift and a half there.
They're out here ostensibly trying to win, ostensibly, like, trying to challenge, whereas the Mariners have been like, nope, we'll see you guys next year. And they are currently 0-2 because of these games.
Like, and lost two home games.
Yeah. I mean, I would be ticked.
Yeah, pretty horrible start to the season for Oakland. Which
And lost their first baseman.
Right. Matt Olson is out with a Hammett. Is that how you say it? Yeah. Okay, well, anyway. Dude fucked up his hand. So.
You hate to see it. Yeah. They have one less Matt, which brings them down to like 13.
I know. We're counting Chads as Matts, right?
Chad, just Matt, Mark. Yeah. Everyone on the A's is the same person.
It's like when Gene Machi said every single baseball player in AAA Tacoma was named Tyler.
At the time,
he was not wrong. Tyler O'Neill.
Is Tyler Moore? Is Tyler?
No, there was
my boy Tyler Cloyd. Moore. Might have been
Tyler Cloyd was there.
Legend.
Maybe not at that time though, but yeah, there were various Taylors and Tylers and Tinkers.
Things of that nature.
Things of that nature. So yeah, the opening series I think is super fun. Obviously, I like everybody staying up to watch the games was really fun, and the kind of just pajama party. Hmm. Like, we're all just staying up overnight, and we're all throwing off our work schedules to do this. Like, that was a fun and kind of convivial thing. I think it was fun for the rest of the team. Okay, maybe it wasn't fun if you were recapping these games.
No, I had a great time. We were just laughing about our quote-unquote work schedules. Yeah. We've got going on here.
Yeah, okay.
Really threw me out of whack.
Yeah. All of us have the gift of flexible scheduling right now. Yeah.
If anyone really had their schedules thrown out of whack, it's the players who had to fly to a different time zone, play baseball, come back, play more baseball, get ready for the best team in the league to probably dump truck them in front of their home fans.
Yeah, but obviously it was pretty rough to watch them in the exhibition games, especially... Probably a little bit jet lagged induced, but the offense looked really good in those first two games, and then that was I think both those games, especially game one, really looked like what I was expecting a lot of this year to look like, the 9-7 slugfest where sometimes the Mariners do enough to hold on, sometimes the Mariners kind of just can't get in a hole and can't dig out of it, or their bullpen kind of pisses it away. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there was a lot of solid, there were a lot of good plate appearances, there was a lot of power. It was entertaining back and forth baseball.
Yeah. Mitch Haniger showing that he's gonna just kind of pick up where he left off. Mm-hmm. It's great. Encouraging things from Domingo Santana.
Tim Beckham,
you know, maybe coming in for a rebound season. D hitting the ball was great too. Just seeing him get out there and have some good reps. I mean, to me, the team that was in Japan looked like what we're going to see, which is, you know, they're going to produce offense and they are going to struggle on the pitching side, which is kind of what we've been saying all season, right? These last two exhibition games have been, today was great pitching by Wade LeBlanc, and then the bullpen mostly held it down.
One run,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
nothing
the offense has been completely flat these past two exhibition games. And so my question for you, are you concerned about this at all? You know, the Mariners struck out a bunch of times. They didn't take a ton of walks. They really didn't hit. Is there anything to concern, or are these spring training games? Would we have felt differently about these exhibition games had they not been played at the place where they'll play 160 or, you know, whatever, where they're going to play half of their season games this year? And would we have felt better if those were two poor showings in Arizona to close out the Cactus League season?
For me personally, I would, like, no matter the location of these exhibition games, I wouldn't have been too worried, because I think it was mostly circumstantial of doing it after Japan. Like, I really feel like that was the main reason for the struggles, and I think a lot of it was also probably like, we don't want to be playing baseball right now. Like the travel schedule.
We want to be in our beds.
Yeah, the travel schedule I feel like was not conducive to having good plate appearances. Like I'm sure it was a lot of like, we want to get this over with sort of thing. We saw a lot of guys who were out by the fourth inning. So, I mean, it obviously wasn't great. Like they were facing a lot of minor league pitchers towards the end of the game and still couldn't score. So that's not ideal, obviously, but I'm not worried about it in the terms of, like, it's going to affect the regular season. I think a lot of these guys are professionals, you know, they've been around for a while. Some of them have not been, but I think it's just going to be a thing where, like, when the Red Sox series starts, they just kind of flip the switch back on. And I also think it's, on the stadium thing, it's very weird to be playing in a stadium that's that empty. Like, opening day, just the sheer volume of fans will probably help the adrenaline a little bit, so... I'm not concerned literally at all about the exhibition games.
Yeah, it wasn't, I mean, I would feel better if they had hit well, if they'd showed up and smashed the ball all over. But, I mean, for one thing, Chris Paddock's actually quite good. Yes. And, you know,
that was really, I feel, in a lot of ways, a coming out party for him.
Yeah, because, he made the roster. You know, maybe not. Maybe that was predetermined, but I mean, he looked lights out, locked in.
There were a lot of tweets, and I mean, not from people who are following the Padres or Mariners specifically, but like just general baseball play people being like, wow, that was really impressive looking.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not terribly concerned, and I think we'll see much like we saw in Japan. I think we will see that inconsistent but offensively capable, offensively deep team come Thursday and come the season.
Yeah, I think it's really important to recognize how many plate appearances went to Dylan Moore and Christopher Negron and Jose Lobaton and
Tim Lopes
the
is
lesser
out here.
Nola. What's the lesser Nola's
Austin.
Name? Austin, yes. I mean, and those are, in a lot of ways, I think that's the last kind of shaggles of a farm system that is just not quite ready to go yet,
the,
and you're filling
has the,
in
has
with
the
these...
peak, but doesn't have necessarily the depth.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it's great because that was literally Tacoma's entire roster last year was, we built the whole plane
shaggles,
out of Negron. Shaggles, yes. They were shaggles.
My new favorite word, shaggles.
But this year, you know, there were exciting things to watch even when things weren't going well. Like, it was exciting to see Evan White, like, square up a major league pitcher and put a real charge into the ball at Safeco Field. It didn't go out, but he made really solid contact.
Yeah, he had a nice play at first, too, which is, we've all kind of come to expect, the defense. That's sort of his, the thing that, you know, carries his profile. But he made a really nice play on a ball off the line.
But for those of you, this was not my first time having seen Evan White play in person. And I do think that, for me, definitely when I saw him play in person at the Arizona Fall League, it changed my perception on him. It definitely hyped me up about Evan White in a way that I hadn't been so hyped about him before. Matthew, you haven't seen Evan White play. Did that...
Sure have not. Noted minor league expert.
Did just seeing that in person kind of do anything for you? Or?
The defense did, yeah. I mean, he just looked smooth and, like, sort of polished. Like, he didn't have the, like, I don't know what I'm doing look that I feel like sometimes can happen when you have the minor leaguers playing up. So that was encouraging. And hitting, I mean, yeah, like you said, he, like, squared up one ball. He seems like... he's going to be a guy who's, like, around for a while. Like, I don't know how to explain it other than he just looks like he belongs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which I guess is, like, part of the whole, you know, esoteric scouting thing. It's like, oh, he looks like he's supposed to be here.
He looks like a ball player.
Yeah, he does look like a ball player. He's very tall. He's very, like, he moves very athletically. So from the little bit I saw, I'm sold. I mean, I don't think he's going to light the world on fire and be a Hall of Famer or anything. But he looks like he can definitely... play first base better than Ryan Healy can. And, I mean, if the offense is just, like, a shade better than Ryan Healy, we have a significantly improved player at first base.
Yeah, I mean, it's garbage until it's not, right? Like, oh, he can play, he looks like a ball player. Like, those are things that you don't really understand until you have a prospect kind of come along to fulfill those. And I think that you look at Evan White and you're like, oh, that's what that means. Like, after years of looking at the Christopher Negron level players, it's like, oh, that's, is this a prospect?
Yeah, I think that was actually, that's a good point, because it was helpful to see him juxtaposed with Dylan Moore and Tim Lopes and Christopher Negron, where you're like, that guy is not what Evan White is.
A lot of it is, you know, it is those sort of things where it's either like it's bat speed or it's size and strength. Like, Kyle Lewis is huge. Like, he's there's enormous. Like, Kyle Lewis does a lot of things well that like made people think he would be a great prospect. He's 6'4". Like, he is bigger than most players. Like, he's much taller than pretty much everyone on the Mariners roster other than like Domingo Santana and Ryan Healy. And he's an outfielder. Like, Evan White is also very tall. Like, a lot of these guys are the real prospects stand out physically first. Yeah.
And Evan White, something to note about him that I talked to, I asked Ryan Divish when I saw him at spring training, like, oh, who's really stood out to you? And he said, Evan White, between meeting him the first time, because Ryan doesn't travel and go see the prospects or anything. So, like, when he saw Evan White, it was when he came to Safeco for his first workout. Mm-hmm. And then he saw Evan White at spring training this year. I guess he probably saw him at spring training last year, too, during the couple times he... No, he was hurt, though, wasn't he? He wasn't around too much.
He played a little bit last year, because he had that one pick on that, like, where he did the splits. That's right,
that was beautiful. Yes. So, he said the biggest difference for him is Evan White went through that high-performance camp, and he's just yoked now. Like, just... muscles. You can't see, but I'm making muscles everywhere.
It's ripped right now.
Yes. So I'm not, to kind of circle back around to the conversation, I'm not super worried about the sort of weak offensive showing just because of who we saw and because it was kind of spring training ish because it was such a weird schedule and everything. I don't think there's anything to be super hand-wringy about in this. Does anything that you've seen so far change the perception that you have on how this team is going to do this year? Because I know we've gone over position by position. We haven't really summed that all up into what do you see this team doing this year? Let's maybe address that a little.
Yeah, the Japan series, like John said, pointed to the style of baseball that I think we're going to see, the 9-7 game where the offense holds its own, sometimes excels, and then the pitching also kind of gives up 6 or 7 runs. I think we're going to see a lot of that, and I think that they can win those games, but I'm not sure that I want them to necessarily. Like, I think for me, the ideal season here is like 72-75 wins.
Yeah.
With some encouraging player development. Because I think truly the worst thing that could happen is them being in it, selling a prospect or two to try to get into the playoffs, and then finishing at like 82 wins and fucking up their draft pick. Like, I'd rather them win, I said this on previous episodes, I'd rather them win 72 than 82, no question in my mind. Even if 82 got them to the playoffs, I'd still kind of feel weird about that. Just because I want them to really... If you're going to go rebuild, you got to do it for more than just 1 year. You know what I mean? Like, you want to get more draft picks and really stock the farm. But, I mean, from the Japan series, I've definitely been encouraged by some of the performances. I don't think Tim Beckham is going to hit 800 by any means. But, I mean, if we can play that style of baseball, I'll certainly be entertained. I'd much rather watch good offense, bad pitching than the other way around. Just from a I'm watching this team every day standpoint.
Yeah. Bad offense is so painful. It's just so
it really turns you off of watching baseball.
Yeah.
I know you guys are more like-minded on this, I think, on the point that Matthew made on how the team's performance, you'd rather see the win-loss column. I think I would still be pretty thrilled if this team was like, I would be more encouraged if this was like an 80, I guess an 84 to like 88 win team, as opposed to if they were like a 70 to 76 win team. But it's all about how it gets there, right? If it's the prospects and some of the young guys on the roster are sort of scuffling, but like, they're just continually winning because some of their bullpen guys break out and I don't know, Edwin Encarnacion and Jay Bruce are doing well. Like, I'm going to be much more concerned about that long term than if Domingo Santana rebounds in a big way and J.P. Crawford sort of starts performing like the top 10 prospect that he was for years, and we see Sheffield come on strong, and we see Swanson come on strong, and we see, you know, guys, you know, maybe Healy or Vogelbach show something more positive. You know, that will be either Vogelbach get reps and get to show something, or Healy look more put together. I mean, that would make me feel like, okay, this team is moving in the right direction. These guys are performing better, likely because of adjustments that are being made. Even though they didn't get as high of a draft pick this year, they still are performing positively. Those guys are getting to play in a competitive environment, and I think that's a great place for guys to show up and say, okay, we're really actually serious about turning this around quickly. You know, you got to jump in and perform. You've seen it done. You know, now it's your turn, Justin Dunn. Now it's your turn, Jared Kelnick, whatever.
I guess for me, the draft pick doesn't matter so much if they can prove that they can develop and that these, and that the, if the prospects take big step forward and you see encouragement, like encouraging signs from them, Evan White continues to hit well. Kyle Lewis has a healthy season. Kelnick continues to look like what I saw in spring training, which is, I think, a player who absolutely looks like he has a major league future ahead of him. As long as all of that happens, I'm not so worried about the draft pick and them absolutely having to have that like highest shelf of talent to draw from in order to, you know, it's not like you have to pick within the top 10 because the talent fall off is so sharp after that. I don't know that we could get into the top 10, honestly, with the level of competition. Like, they're in our own division. The Rangers are ostensibly going to be worse than us.
The bottom of the AL is atrocious.
It's I just don't see
I predicted five AL teams would have 100 losses this year, and I don't think any of those are the Mariners. Like,
The Rangers, the Orioles, the White Sox, the
Tigers,
and the Royals.
And the Royals are
The Royals and White Sox could be a step better than last year, but they could very easily also.
Yeah, I'm really a little more bullish on the White Sox, but I think also there's a chance the Blue Jays are really bad. Yeah. I don't know if 100 losses, but they're not going to be good.
As far as worse than this team as currently constructed, though, I think that they're definitely worse. Yeah.
Especially with Vladdy missing a month and then probably having more time on the DL.
Yeah.
Right. And I will say, John's thing about, like, if they can get to 85 wins with the player development, I'm obviously all for that.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to be a thing where, like, they get to mid-July, realize they're kind of in it, and say, okay, we're going to trade Shed Long or something for a middle reliever.
If they short-arm things, or short-circuit their development for the sake of suddenly turning it around, that's really deeply upsetting and concerning about the conviction that they have in their
and so far they have said, at least publicly, that they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But they've said a lot of things, right? Like, we've had to invent a scale for the truthiness of what comes out of this front office, which is, you know, usually some degree of the truth, but often only reveals itself later on down the road.
So. Yeah, the name of the game is just player development. Like, I'd be okay with 68 wins if Domingo Santana is killing it and all the minor league kids look like they're making strides. Like, I've really sort of divorced myself from the idea of wins and losses this year because it's not important. It's really all about individual performances.
Do you guys, when was the last time you guys really remember, or maybe this has always been the way, but do you guys remember distinctly watching baseball exclusively for individuals as opposed to watching it for a team?
I can't. For me, that was the Ackley, Miller, Saunders, all those teams. Because those teams were bad. We knew there wasn't going to be anything. Right. But I remember specifically when Dustin Ackley coming up, like making time against the Phillies, I think it was, that series when he debuted, being like, okay, I should watch him, but not even in like a, is he getting a hit? It's like, how does his bat speed look? How is he doing defensively? Like, little things that aren't necessarily conducive to winning. Like, I didn't care if he had an RBI. It was more like, does he have a good approach? So that's kind of going to be me with, you know, when I'm watching the minors this year, like with the young kids, not are they, you know, driving in two runs every game and going 2 for 5? Do they look like they know what they're doing and they have a plan?
Mm-hmm. And addressing some weaknesses that were maybe in their game, like, it's going to be really important to me this year that Evan White show that he can hit for some power, because as talented as he is defensively, like, the difference between him being an everyday major leaguer and maybe even, like, a, you know, 4 WAR guy is whether or not he has any power.
Yeah, especially at first base. Like, you can't really expect to be, like, a major league first baseman every day hitting 7 home runs in a season. Like, you can do it, but it's not ideal.
So, were there any... Do we want to maybe do, like, breakout candidates and players who we expect might take a step back? Or, you know, like, sleepers and something like that? Who are you high on? Who are you not so high on?
I really like, I mean, Japan wasn't kind to him. I really like Omar Narvaez. Mm-hmm. I think especially when it's framed against Mike Zunino, who I also liked, but they're completely opposite. I think having a catcher with good OBP skills who can actually, like, work an at-bat and sort of keep an inning going, rather than with Mike, it was like, okay, he's either going to hit a home run and get us 3 runs, which is great, or the inning is over. Yeah. Like, it's
worst
one of the
claw
two.
Machine ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I had family members who used to call Dan Wilson Rally Killer Wilson, which was a little unfair. But
ouch.
Yeah. It was funny. Like, I was a kid. I was like, ah, ha, ha. This is the height of comedy. Good job. And eventually, I think it just kind of bled into me feeling that way about Mike Zunino, because rarely ever did he draw the walk to get the next guy up or hit behind the runner or get a single up the middle to score the run.
It I can, like, remember the time he did it. It was that one time where they beat the A's because Mike Zunino walked and then D. Gordon hit a homer. And it was like the only time that that happened.
So
it was
wild!
Right.
It was just absolutely baffling.
Yeah, so to bring it all back, seeing Omar Narvaez do that regularly, like draw a walk to get to whoever's hitting after him. Maybe it'll be Tim Beckham sort of slotting in after him with a lot of RBI chances. Like, I'm excited for that. I love sort of that style of hitting where it's like I can slap the ball to left field for a single if I need to, rather than it's all or nothing. That's kind of taken over Major League Baseball, and it's nice to have sort of the counterculture of Omar Narvaez in a way. So I like him. I mean, Domingo, obviously, I'm big on him, but I feel like other people are going to say that.
Domingo is, I think, probably the person I'm most excited. I think I wrote this maybe even in his 40 and 40 that he was the person I'm most excited to watch this year.
We have a guest.
The beauty of
the
live podcast.
Wow. Yeah, it's Grant, staff writer. Grant is here.
Hey, Graham Rosen.
I will say, you three are my favorite three podcasters in the entire city of Seattle.
Oh, we love that.
So nice, Grant. Pull up a chair and chat with us.
Okay, sure thing.
John, we're going over
we
like
might
our.
We have another chair in my house. We can have the very relaxed recline.
This is a furniture podcast now.
We are just going over the sleepers and the highs and the lows. Who we like and who we are maybe a little querulous about. Yes,
yeah. Kate, you haven't mentioned your breakout. Well, Grant gets situated. We can talk about your breakout candidate.
We can. I mean, John was already partway through talking about Domingo
Santana.
Yeah,
I was erasing John. Moving on.
Please don't erase John.
Yeah, I mean, Domingo's, I think, the person that I'm most excited to watch. He's got absolutely mammoth power. He has shown himself to be capable of being a star-level player at the major league level, and now he has the opportunity to do it, and he could be in Seattle for 3 more years, or, you know, or 3 full years, I guess. So we can see him now and in the future, which is what this is all about.
You don't have to go right away, Grant. Poor Grant is sitting in this very low chair.
Looks like Grant
have to, like, move the microphone.
Grant's
got to
do a layup line or do some stretches. Got
to
get warmed
up. Nick Rumble on the phone.
No, thank you. Who is to my breakout.
Do you have a pitcher? We've gone all offense so far. There's not really a breakout candidate on the pitching staff.
Yeah, no. I mean
Kikuchi. But
I want
Nick Rumbelo. Move to the rotation.
I want to keep expectations nice and low for Kikuchi because I do think he's looked good so far. And I think that he's going to... I think that there are some things that he's really going to struggle with in the transition to playing ball here, like the actual ball itself or the schedule or just things are going to wear on it. So I want to keep things, and I hope that the team is, you know... Yeah.
I mean, that was a big part of their selling point to him was that they had a unique plan, that they're going to work him every fifth start, I think it is, as essentially an opener, which will be kind of a neat testing point for that strategy of does this sort of way of easing a guy in actually help them transition more capably, more healthily from the different schedule in the Japan.
I'm going to say for my breakout candidate, I'm going to go a little outside the box and say I think it's Justice Sheffield. I was so... Oh, Grant is slapping his hand.
That was my guy.
All right, Grant, we can team up on this. Well, I saw him at spring training and I was super impressed when he was throwing against his major league teammates, against Haniger, against D. Gordon, against Encarnacion. Like, they were all coming back like, what... Like, they were struggling to hit him. And it wasn't like a, oh, I'm just trying to be nice to my teammate or anything. Like, they were frustrated at the plate. And the changeup looks much better, I think, than maybe we thought it would. What draws you to Justice?
I like that scouting outlook. And I would just say he's a top 30 prospect in the game of baseball. So this is a guy that's got top notch pedigree. That the second that he was traded away from New York, the media decided to say, oh, well, you know, he's not a New York Yankees prospect anymore. Right. So is he even going to be a starter? He might be a middle reliever. I think that's overblown, right? Like, you don't get to be a top shelf prospect like that and flash stuff at like AAA.
The age of 22.
At 22, right. He's like, below a league average age. He's, you know, striking guys out. He's actually performing well as a starter. I'm cautiously optimistic about Justice Sheffield.
Yes. Those are good answers. Is there anyone we're feeling worried about? Anyone that we think might not hit expectations or might take a big step back this year?
It's not so much expectations. It's I don't understand why they're on the team. It's both Encarnacion and Bruce. Like, I haven't seen a lot from them so far. Obviously, it's two games in the regular season and also spring training. But I'm... very worried that both of them hit like 230 and we don't get any sort of return for them and they're just on the team all year. That seems like the worst case scenario is they both are on the team in September.
Bruce hit well at spring training when I saw him. I mean,
Bruce hit like 18 singles up the middle. was not bad. It was like every time I watched him, he was hitting the exact same.
I should also say I didn't watch a lot of spring training.
Maybe that's what he was working on. I don't know. When I was in person, he hit home runs. So I probably have a little bit. But no, I've been really pleasantly surprised by Jay Bruce. I think he's a good dude and a good teammate, and he seems genuinely happy to be here, and he really seems to want to put his poor year, his unhealthy year behind him, and I expect good things from Jay Bruce. I am really worried about Encarnacion, and we were saying today he might be a slow starter, but he's so slow he's going backwards. if that's the case.
And I'll also say, I mean, I think Jay Bruce's inclusion in the trade coming to Seattle was largely as a salary, just extra salary. There wasn't a lot of expectation that he would return positive value for us, so the fact that he might be worth something is nice.
Yes.
On the flip side, Edwin Encarnacion was acquired as this guy could be somebody you could trade and get value for, especially hopefully before the season. That hasn't planned out, so now we're hoping that by the trade deadline he will be able to reclaim that value and we can get a prospect or two for him. And I would echo the voices here. I'm not optimistic that will happen.
Encarnacion feels like a huge miscalculation by the front office. I think they're surprised he's still a Mariner. I almost wonder if they had like a deal worked out with Tampa Bay where he was going to be flipped to them as part of it or what happened. But something went wrong. Edwin Encarnacion should not be a Seattle Mariner right now. He should not be adding to that logjam at first base. And yeah. I think that that's an example of the front office making a mistake, making mm-hmm. a miscalculation, thinking they could move him and not being able to.
I'm a little bit worried about Malik Smith.
That was my other person I was going to bring up.
Yeah, because I like Malik's profile as a player. I like his the fact that he's a capable center fielder, and you need a capable center fielder in Safeco. or T-Mobile Park, excuse me.
Flashing magenta light just yeah. like went off here in the podcast studio.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sure he is now healthy from his UCL sort of sprain or flexure bundle strain that he had, and he's been working in Arizona, and he got some reps this week, but we've seen so many places around the league guys who miss spring training and are hurrying back. I mean, we saw it last year with Ryan Healy. You know, there's spring training is silly in a lot of ways and kind of a weird thing now that guys are working out and are baseball players year round, but getting major league reps is something that helps you prepare in a way that is unlike anything else. And I'm worried that Malik, who is already a guy who has a profile that could regress potentially, depending on how he's able to replicate his really high BABIP, I don't want him to get off on a really bad foot here, having to play catch up and then fall into a slump that he's spending most of the year digging out of. And I worry that that may be what he's set up for if he's not given more time to really get in the flow.
Yeah, I'm disappointed he didn't do like a rehab. I mean, he can't really, but I wonder if they could like sort of IL him and send him to Tacoma to do a little rehab stint. Or hey,
I mean, they could have, but they didn't put him on the IL, right? Like,
yeah. But I mean, they could say like, "Oh, he's still damaged." And
yeah, I mean, ultimately, they could probably still. I mean, he hasn't played in any games since, so they can retroactively do it. But the moment he plays on opening day, that will not be the case. He'll be, up, you know, to that point. So
it's problematic. Yeah. John, do you want to maybe, we're coming in on about 40 minutes here, so do you want to maybe...
Yeah, we got some questions here.
Send up some questions and we will kick them around.
So, let's go with this question from someone actually we saw this afternoon at the exhibition match. This comes from @JoeVieira on Twitter.
Never heard of him.
local news magnate. Should the Mariners jump on the fast-moving extension train? And if so, who should they look to lock up? If you haven't been following the general baseball news recently, by the way, about a dozen players almost at this point.
Nobody wants to be a free agent ever again.
Yeah. We have Mike Trout, Jacob DeGrom, Kyle Hendricks, Alex Bregman.
Eloy Jimenez. Haven't played for their team yet, like Jimenez and Paul Goldschmidt. They literally never played a game for their team, and they got an extension.
A ton of guys have signed, at most, on market, and a lot of what people would probably view as reasonably team-friendly extensions. Certainly making tens of millions of dollars, but relative to what you'd think that people would be able to, or be willing to pay them on the free market. A lot of guys getting locked up. Is there anyone that you guys that comes to mind for you guys that as someone the Mariners would extend based on their current contract, production, etc.?
I don't know what his contract looks like or how many years are left. The one that jumps to mind is Mitch Haniger. Like, sure. If we're going to get out in front of it, it's him. I don't know who else is even really, like, we're not going to extend, like, any kids in the minors yet, I don't think. Like, there's not going to be an Eloy Jimenez situation, and none of the pitchers really need it, like... If anyone, it's got to be Mitch. I truly have no idea what his contract is like.
So he's in his last year of pre-arbitration this year, and then we'll have three more years of arbitration after this. So the earliest he'd be a free agent would be after the 2022 season.
Okay.
And those will go from, he's making essentially like $580,000 this year, Then he'll start making a couple million next year.
I would guess, probably. And these numbers are with no research other than having played out-of-the-park baseball ad nauseum, he would make something like 6 or 7 million year one if he repeats the year he had last year.
Yeah.
He'd make 6 or 7 million in 2020. He'd make something like 10 to 11 or 10 to 12 in 2021 and 15 or so in 2022. So that's what you get by going year to year, assuming that he keeps up the season he had last year. So in order to buy him out of that, the Mariners would want to get at least one or two more years of free agency. And I think that's where it gets a little more complicated because Haniger's an older, young player, right? Right now, this is his age 28 season, so his first free agent year will be his age 32 season. So if the Mariners are only going to lock up arbitration in order to actually get some extra control, then he's going to start having a much smaller window of actually hitting free agency.
Yeah.
So would he rather get the guarantee of, three arb years, one or two free agent years, and then hit free agency at 34 or 35? Or would he rather just go year to year and then be a free agent for age 32 season and use that to lock up a bigger contract? And then you add in the whole, the CBA process that people are they're willing to take an extension and not wait and see what's going to happen when the union and the MLB come together and hash out how free agency right. might look in a couple years. But I wonder if he'd be a guy that wants to wait for what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I think that if you wanted to make this, it wouldn't be a major extension, but because a lot of the guys who are the most productive Mariners right now are those slightly older players. Mitch very well might not ever have that big payday. He would actually it's my thought that he might be more inclined to say, well, I'll just lock it up now. I'll get an extra year or two and then we'll see, but I'll at least have made for sure, $50 million, $80 million, whatever they might decide it would be in my career.
It would be a nice gesture, I think, for them to give him something so he's not making $500,000 for under $6,000 for this year when he's obviously going to produce a lot more value. Like,
and is someone who they've consistently stated is like, we want our team to emulate and to it would be a gesture of good faith for the organization, in a sense of like, if you perform this way, you conduct yourself this way, we as an organization will reward you.
Buy into what we're doing.
Exactly.
And so I hope that these conversations are happening, and I think that they should happen sooner rather than later. But in general, the extension conversation isn't one I think that's super relevant to us right now until we start having players like Justice Sheffield, Chad Long, J.P. Crawford, like, potentially coming up.
I think in that same vein, you could make a case for Marco Gonzalez. It wouldn't be a major money deal. I mean, it would be something somewhat like what Kyle Hendricks got, probably a little bit less. I think it was 5 years, like, $55 million is, I believe, what he got. I don't know that it would be that for him, but, Marco's 27 this year, and he's, I think, also got that same number, 3. I think he's got 3 years
He just had a grievance that was avoided by the Mariners agreeing to a new contract for this season.
Yeah.
So I believe his case was that he should have been, instead of being Super 2, he might have actually been a full extra year of ARB. So I think I think you're right. I think he's got 3 years left.
Right. I think this is his first year of ARB now.
I think it's an in-between where technically it's not...
Or I guess they bumped up his pay to like $1 million or something.
So I think... So it looks like he's first arbitration eligible in 2021. It'll be a free agent for the 2024 season.
Oh, right. And they did like the extension.
Yeah, so
So he wouldn't even make that much sense.
So you'd be locking... You've already got 2 years locked up, 2019 and 2020.
Yeah.
So you'd be giving him at least... the 3 years of arbitration for his ages 29, 30, 31 season.
Yeah.
Given his injury history and given that he was good last year but not spectacular, my guess is that that the Mariners would not be willing to give him a contract that he'd be looking for.
The only extension they gave out last year, because we saw the Gene Segura extension the year before, The only extension they gave out last year was the Wade LeBlanc one, which was that very strange, like, there's team options for, like, three. Yeah, so I could see them doing something like that, but at a higher pay rate, but I don't know if Marco would go for that.
Yeah.
Well, the difference between Marco and Hendricks is that I believe it was eating up Hendricks' free agent years.
Yes.
And obviously Marco was not close to free agency yet. Right. However, I think Hendricks has a little less injury risk and has been a more consistent innings eater.
Yeah.
So I think you could work some sort of deal with Marco. He kind of fits in the same boat as Haniger as well. He's a slightly older, but doesn't have that much service time.
Yeah.
And my guess would be, as a pitcher who's already gone through Tommy John surgery, he'd be very okay with an extension to take the secure money. The question is, would he be willing to reduce the maximum number of dollars he'd actually get by taking such an extension?
Yeah, it'd be that. I think that those are sort of the only two that
It's hard to guess as to what his arbitration salaries even would be because he's still far enough away and it's only one real season of major league time.
Yeah. We can go to next question. Here's one from Jason at JT Sweezo.
Sweeze.
Please, we've been thinking about this one a little bit beforehand, although Grant, I think, has not seen it, but he's a clever lad. Please grace us with as many pun-laden fantasy team names featuring current M's as possible.
Yeah, John and I actually had a mind meld on this. He read me the question, and I thought of one, and then John, right before we started recording, said it, and that was Domingo Ate My Baby. Which I think is pretty strong. Mm-hmm. He also mentioned that someone in his real life fantasy league has that. So he did not make that up. I came up with it on my own, let the record show.
It's only one person committed intellectual theft.
Yeah. There's a lot, though. I mean, there's some low hanging ones with Mitch. Like, you could do, like, Mitch, don't kill my vibe. 99 Mitch's problems, but stitches. A Mitch ain't one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to contribute back that Narvaez.
I like it.
That's the one.
I'm bringing Vogel back.
Bringing Vogel back. Yeah. Big Strick energy.
Mm. Oh, no.
Yes. Boy. You say that you love me.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty. There are tons of punnable names on the roster this year. That is one gift that the Mariners have given us.
I will say, from the last stint that Malik Smith had as a Mariner, from our article that I worked on with, I think it was with T, where we decided to do the 10 best moments of Malik Smith in a Mariners uniform.
Oh, yes.
We included a picture of Alex Smith, the now Washington quarterback, with a fedora and said, Ma-Alex Smith. So if you are truly desperate for a fantasy baseball team name and would like to use an injured NFL quarterback as your team picture, you have that option.
It's pretty good. Free content for everyone out there.
Yeah, I mean, We also have two girls, one Ross Cup.
Nope. Nope.
Yes.
It's canceled. I like it a lot.
Fantasy baseball is canceled. One.
Yep. Speaker box, the rum below.
Nope.
I was trying to think of that. Yeah. Something related to that.
Prince Felix? Is that too soon?
Oof. Like a demotion.
That's hard. Damn. That's harsh.
I mean, we can cut it. We don't have to use these.
The Bruce is loose.
Oh, actually, one from friend of the blog, Brittany Bushbole's son, Duck Duck Bruce.
Yes,
oh.
Duck Duck Bruce. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
There's always a festa fuss for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you have a fantasy team named after Matt Festa, that should be at least worth one win. Like, you're really putting in the effort.
Because if that is...
Yeah, don't actually have him on your team.
Yeah.
I don't think middle relievers have a lot of fantasy value.
Not a ton. I'm trying to think of some chess puns for Braden Bishop, but I don't know enough about chess.
That was a self-checkmate right there.
Fair enough.
All right, hit us with the next one.
All righty. No Shed Long ones there. That was too bad. I was staring at it for a while. Here's one from former staff writer, Isabel Manassian.
Never heard of her.
Nope.
In light of the MLB Game of Thrones crossovers this season, Who is the one character from Game of Thrones you would draft to be the 26th man on the Mariners roster? Conversely, which Mariner is most well-equipped to kill a White Walker? Since I believe a minimum one of you, and maybe two of you, have not watched the show.
Never seen a single frame.
I guess what would... Imagine it's like a bear, but like a really, like a magical evil
That's
bear.
What the White Walkers are?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, but like That's comparable sort of...
Not what I've seen.
I mean, it's not... I'm just trying to like...
Aren't
what
they
would
like zombies, sort of?
Kind well, the White Walkers are the ones who like raise the zombies, but they're just like... I'm thinking of like a very intimidating, difficult to kill thing.
Okay.
So like, I guess like what Mariner would you want most in single combat?
Wade LeBlanc. Wade LeBlanc, because he cut down all the Red Sox that time.
Fair
Improbable
enough.
Improbable victory.
That's true.
That's fair.
If it's a finesse style fight, absolutely Wade LeBlanc. If it's sheer power, I'm taking Domingo Santana.
Yeah, that's fair. Give him a great club and just let him go to work.
Give me our large adult son.
I'm taking Vogue.
That was my backup. But Domingo seems like he would be more well equipped.
I was watching a highlight video last night, and it included the Vogelback home run off the Hit It Here Cafe, or like really above the Hit It Here Cafe.
Yeah.
And that reminded me that, yeah, that guy can basically
he can mash.
Destroy
he can,
any
he
sort
can
of
mash
bear
some
zombie
taters.
Type creature.
To answer the other question about drafting a player onto the Mariners, there's dragons in Game of Thrones.
There
right?
certainly are.
We're having a dragon closer.
Yes.
Sorry, Hunter Strickland.
I mean, we already had one, sort of.
Is there a rule about pitching from your mouth? Imagining a dragon putting the ball in their mouth.
Is that a spitball?
And breathing it at a hitter.
I think that might
as long
be.
As they could locate.
A whole new meaning to the word fireballer.
Other than
yeah.
Their arms kind of tiny and useless.
Right, yeah.
It might be tough. You could get... There's not a ton of, like... translatable skills there. Like, there's some really big, strong people. I think probably Arya would just be a very good base stealer. She got on, like, she's got a small strike zone.
Scrappy little utility
yeah,
player.
And, you know, she can imitate other people's faces, so she can, like,
Whoa.
Hop over to, you know, she can
oh,
get,
yeah.
get a lead, and then suddenly, you know, looks like that's, you know, Chad Pinder on first base, but suddenly she's just at second base. Yeah,
that sounds good to me. I'll take Arya over Chad Pinder any day of the
Absolutely.
Week.
That
was easy.
Complete agreement. Okay, let's see. Here's one from William Lofton that's sort of touched on an issue that I think a lot of folks have had with worrying about the rest of the rebuild. The Mariners just restocked their farm system this offseason, but I feel that they'll end up trading again to ultimately acquire talent. Do you agree, or do you think they'll actually spend money in free agency when it's time to contend?
Yeah, I don't think that... I mean, I don't want to borrow trouble necessarily, but I don't think that it's going to be a huge problem that they suddenly find themselves in the midst of an improbable playoff run. I would love to cross that bridge when I come to it. But no, I don't think they're going anywhere this year. I don't think our prospects are going anywhere.
Sure.
And they've basically said that the prospects won't be
going
anywhere.
I think we're talking,
so.
I think in this question, it's talking like down the road. Like when they're in 2021, 2022.
I mean, at that point, maybe you have some excess that you can deal off of the farm, but as far as like the core guys going anywhere, I don't see like they're building around Jared Kelnick and Julio and Logan Gilbert. Like maybe some fringy guys get traded, but by and large I think that we are in a process where we're going to see the farm steadily stocking until 2021.
I think that all makes a lot of sense. I will say teams build around their young prospects and will say that they're building around them right up until the moment where they're not. I don't think they would trade away prospects for older veteran talent in the way that this question is understandably asking. I think I could see some sort of more challenge-type trade where it's a Jesus Montero for Michael Pineda, where, you know, we don't need this pitcher. We want a catcher who can hit. that kind of a deal. I could see something like that.
Challenge.
But I don't think it's that likely, just because it's really hard to get two organizations that are so confident in the other team's valuation being low on their own guy and high on their player that they will both make that deal. So my guess is, effectively, I agree with Kate, but I wouldn't put anything past Jerry Dipoto.
I don't think that we have to worry about them spending on filling out the edges of the roster. I do think that DePoto's experience in Anaheim and having had a roster that was, due to the constrictions he was given with the payroll, inflexible because of Cano's contract and Felix's contract and I guess Cruz's contract, not that that was particularly bad. I think that there is some built-up reticence in there. I mean, he has said before, you don't build a team through free agency. You finish a team in free agency, which I don't think is necessarily true. I think it is often true, but that's sort of been a result. I don't think that has to be true. So I think we will continue to see a lot of trades over the next several years. And I think Kate's correct that those core guys that they've gone out of their way for, I think most of them are sticking around. But because
please stop adding the account every time I tweet about Julio or Jared about trading them.
Because if those guys don't work out, none of this is going to work out. No. You know, that's the situation they've set themselves up in, and that's not a bad situation, but that is the situation, and it just means that they do have to be willing to spend probably particularly on pitching. Because there's not a ton of starting pitching depth in the organization. And they might have to spend on a third baseman or something to that effect. We'll probably see them deal from outfield depth if things go well and they're able to continue. If they're able to develop Jake Fraley and Don Thompson-Williams and Kyle Lewis and Julio or Jared. Yeah, we're gonna see them deal from those prospects, but that'll be... That's ideal. That would be an awesome situation. And for the amount that is between then and now, I think there's a lot that could go a whole bunch of different directions. Well, that's what we got. Is there anything else? I guess any more bold predictions for the season before we wrap up here?
You want to close out on some bold, your hottest... spiciest take for the 2019 season?
I want to hear we've all talked a little bit about this, but I know that a lot of us are looking to watch other teams more this year.
Who are our bandwagon?
So I'm curious
teams.
Who your bandwagon teams are this year, if you have one picked out.
I got a couple, honestly. It's pretty much the entire NL East that's not the Marlins. I'm really, from an entertainment standpoint, I think the Mets, Phillies, and Braves are pretty solid bet. From a team that I'm like, if I had to bet on a team to like do a lot, that's also going to be fun to watch. Like the best return on your investment, if you want to watch wins and fun, that's the Milwaukee Brewers for me.
I will go all in on the San Diego Padres.
Ooh!
Opening day Fernando Tatis Jr.
True.
With Chris Paddock starting, and having seen him last night in a dreadful game for the hometown nine, Chris Paddock was pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of fun hitters. There's a lot of fun prospects. There's Manny Machado, who I think is just a really great player to watch. And I enjoy that. I think The Athletic had a poll today where they pulled players, who's the dirtiest player in the league, and I think 60% said Manny Machado. I love that. I
mean, he's like recency bias.
He sounds like a total jerk, but like I will enjoy watching that on TV.
Absolutely.
They also got my boy Franchi.
Franchi.
I decided literally several hours ago that I love him. So.
Yeah, the Padres are fun, pound for pound. There's a lot of fun to be had in that team. And I will watch them and be entertained by them. Obviously, the NL East. I think one that we haven't mentioned yet is the Reds. Mm-hmm. I like the Reds. I'll watch whatever Yasiel Puig does. And then in the AL, obviously that's harder, but... and the Mets, of course, the Mets. I mentioned the whole NL East. But watching, it doesn't super pain me to watch ex-Mariners. I want Edwin and Robinson to be successful. Mm-hmm. I am unsure about the Yankees retconning James Paxton into being and just taking the whole Eagle thing and being like, this is ours now.
It's truly one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, you can check out the Yankees tweet if you don't know what we're talking about. Or also don't and just take our word for it that it's terrible.
Pour bleach in your eyes instead.
Also a choice.
Bandwagoning bleach.
I feel like Team Clorox. I picked the Yankees to win it all, but it's hard. It's going to be really hard to watch those games. I think I just can't. Go Twins in the AL. Yeah.
Nelson Cruz.
Absolutely. I might as well just say go Nelson Cruz because I don't actually care.
You say
care
they let
about
him coach the final spring training
game? Yes, and I can't wait for Nelson Cruz to come back and coach the Mariners.
Absolutely.
Super excited.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
You just levitated.
Yeah.
Yeah. The entire NL is going to be pretty neat. I love that both the NL Central and the NL East essentially have 9 teams that could win the division between them. Sorry, Marlins. But it's going to be really fun. And I think this year will be a really big year of trying to watch. A lot like I've watched the NBA in the last few years. I think we've talked a little bit about this on the podcast, but the NBA is, since we don't have the Sonics, it's a lot of fun to watch for players and for storylines, and it's going to be really nice to watch games and not worry constantly about this threadbare possibility of the Mariners making the playoffs being dependent on what the fucking Rays and Astros are doing. So that'll be...
Oh, my other AL team. Go Rays.
There you go.
Yeah, go Rays.
So, okay, well...
You wanted to do hottest take.
Let's give me that hot take. Give me that
spit that spicy fire.
So we should mention, you're going to have some in writing on the site, so check those out. But we should probably veer away from those so we don't double up on the people.
I got a good one to start out with.
All right, hit us.
The Mariners are currently infinity times better than every other team in the league. By not only the end of the season, by Thursday, they will no longer be infinity times better than everyone in the league.
Yes, that is...
Strong. It's a strong opening.
Hot fire. A Mariner specific hot take.
Does not need to be Mariner specific. Can be Mariner specific. But it's MLB. If you have something, okay. MLB.
Well, my AL West hot take is the Athletics finished third and we finished fourth and the Angels finished second.
I like that.
Even though they have no pitching, I think they're just going to club.
Neither do the A's.
Their way, yeah. I think they're going to club their way into some stuff. I don't know, man. The A's lineup is so frightening, but gosh, that pitching is just
equally
garbo.
Frightening. But for the other reason,
yeah. That's my AL West hot take. My Mariners hot take. Is that the team does not lower ticket prices officially. Like, they just keep doing flash sales for games we don't want to go to. And it continues to cost $35 to sit in the bleachers on, like, a weekend. Prove me wrong!
That one's not very fun.
No, I'm sorry. None of them are fun. And my MLB hot take is Bryce Harper gets in a fight with every player because he thinks they all are the ones who said he was the most overrated. Like, I think Bryce Harper just has like a chip on his shoulder all season long.
So Bryce Harper is going to fight
everyone he possibly can.
Cosign.
Yeah, Bryce Harper gets into, this is my hot take, Bryce Harper gets into not one, not two, not three, but 6 fights this year.
Not one, not two, not three. The Decision, part 2. That's a good one. I'll go next if you want
me
to. My Mariners one is that we see Shed Long, Justin Dunn, and Justice Sheffield all at some point in the big leagues this year, which would be fun. I'm rooting for that.
I'm rooting for that.
I like having hot takes that actually I want to root for rather than ones that make me sad.
Like, he just looked at me with like a side eye.
I mean, I'm trying to go to $10 games in August and September, Mariners, if you're listening, make that happen. MLB related one. Let's see. I mean, I think that the White Sox are going to be better than people think. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think they surprise people. I wouldn't be surprised if they got to 80 wins. That's probably a hot take, but I wouldn't. I'm not going to bank on it, but it wouldn't shock me.
I guess I kind of gave my written one already earlier this podcast, just in conversation about 100 lost teams. But I think there are going to be some trash fire teams this year. Yeah, like, I think in the NL, the Diamondbacks and the Marlins. Yeah. Diamondbacks aren't going to be nearly as bad as the Marlins, but they just, I think there are going to be some rough stuff.
The Giants, too, are going to be bad.
Yeah, the Giants are going to be rough.
Do the Orioles double count if they lose 200?
I was going to say,
they lose 200.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think maybe. I think, how about this? We'll say 300 win teams in the AL East.
Ooh.
Whoa. Wow.
I think
John loves the Blue Jays.
I think that the Blue Jays are going to really struggle. And I think the Orioles might. I guess the
could potentially
pairing,
be the worst
the
team
paired
ever.
Part of this is I think the Orioles might have the worst record in MLB history.
Yeah, serious question, yeah. Actually. Who is the Orioles' best player? I don't even know who's on the
Dylan
team.
Dylan Bundy, I believe.
I believe it's financial flexibility.
I think it's Dylan Bundy.
I have said many times I think Alex Cobb is due for like a restart.
Oh, yeah, he's on their team.
But he's...
But he's already hurt.
Yeah, he's already hurt, so it's a lot.
Congratulations. No. If you're listening, you are now pitching for the Orioles every
Orioles
fifth day.
Just get down to Camden Yards. They'll give you a jersey.
The Orioles' best player is Cedric Mullins III, or Cedric the Entertainer, who is 5'8". And plays like he's 6'5". He's just so much fun. So
okay.
That's a rooting interest for the Orioles for you. But yeah, they are very much, Pecota thinks that they're going to be potentially the worst team.
Do they still have Trey Mancini?
They do have Trey Mancini.
He could be decent.
he is
for Orioles standpoint.
He's projected by Fangraphs to be a sub 1 win player in 560 PS.
Yeah,
they're also going to miss Mark
good.
Trumbo's out for that basically
Trumbo's
the
hurt.
Whole year, who's like would be Jonathan Villar is like definitely their best player.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Tillman? And he's not, none of their position players are projected to be 2 win.
But
players.
Is Tillman on the team?
Tillman's not on the team.
Yikes. Okay. I'm just trying to grasp for names here. I don't know anyone on this team
anymore.
They
still have Andrew Cashner. They still have Nate Carnes.
Oh!
You know who they have? One very good relief pitcher in Michael Givens.
Oh, he's getting traded yesterday.
And absolutely, he will be. But, like, this team is unbelievably bad and has to play potentially the two best teams in baseball and definitely two of, like, the five best teams in baseball.
Right.
And the Rays, who are very solid.
Yeah.
They could lose 120. I think that it will lose 120 games.
Wow. All right. There's your hot take.
Like, they had Machado.
Five beyond Picadas.
I mean, they were 47-115 last year with Manny Machado for half the year.
Yeah.
And they have only gotten worse.
They sure have, as their other division mates have gotten better.
Yeah.
So, bold, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
All right, well,
Grant.
Yeah, so my Mariners prediction is that Hunter Strickland will be an All-Star this year.
I think he's gonna rack up
the saves, and they might, you know, if Haniger doesn't have a great start, if you know, the Mariners will need a representative somewhere, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it be Strickland. I also wouldn't be surprised to see Strickland and Mitch. I think he's going to surprise some people. He's not been a bad reliever in his career. And last year he decided to punch a wall and let that kind of derail things. So that's my Mariners related prediction. I see John laughing in their corner over here.
No, this,
so
you're good.
I assume he's already making fun of me online.
I think that's actually a great one. Okay. I am actually pretty on board with that.
I'm also kind of agreeing with Matthew. It's much more fun to make a bold prediction that you can root for and not a depressing one like Malik Smith will never repeat last season's F4 total in a season. Which
see,
I also
the thing
think
is you also true. Did just say that.
Yeah. My MLB wide prediction is that someone will hit 4 home runs in a game this year.
Ooh, I like that. That's
there's
a fun,
that's
one.
Fun.
More
that's
and more
fun.
Homers. There's more and more power guys.
Why not? When did Scooter do it? Did Scooter hit 4 or 3?
He hit 4.
Was that 2 years ago? 2017?
I think it was 2017. Yeah.
I thought of some more while you guys were talking. Mike Zunino starts the All-Star game.
Oh.
It's not out of the... AL catchers are horrible.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
And Salvi Perez
is out.
Yeah.
Gary Sanchez cannot catch the ball,
yeah,
which is a big part of being a catcher, as it turns out. So yeah, I mean, who are the... Like, the candidates are Mike Z, Gary Sanchez...
Lucroy,
Lucroy is beyond washed. He's circling the drain.
We all just pretend that Joe Mauer still plays and also
yeah,
still passes.
Let Joe Mauer do, like, a Dirk thing
in the
All-Star
McCann?
Game.
Is he still around?
Brian McCann's a backup for the Braves now.
You thank know, you. Sean Murphy for the Athletics may be up, and he's...
That's I don't know who that
yeah,
is.
He's a prospect.
He's not... He wasn't on their opening.
All right, so yeah, Mike Z
is good now.
But he might be, at some point, called up. I mean, that would be a lot to... put on him, but yeah, that's literally the only person I can think of who's a good AL catcher is somebody who's not played yet.
So yeah, Mike Z starts the All-Star game and Trevor Bauer gets banned from Twitter.
Ooh.
Forever.
Spicy fun. All right, well, thank you all so much for listening along with us as we recorded this special podcast episode. It was so great to be in the same room with all of you and see all of your smiling faces. And we'll be back next week talking real baseball. We'll have some real baseball to talk about. So shout us out. Send us your questions. And hopefully we'll see you around the park. Bye.